up?
Welcome back to the Level Up Anime Podcast, everyone. I'm your co-host, Shara, and this is my co-host, Aziz, fellow connoisseur of all things anime, manga, and more, and who also solo leveled up into my life personally.
Very
cute, right? You like that?
Manwa Riz?
Yeah, Manwa Riz! You get the joke? I mean, it's funny. I really fought hard about that one.
Did you? That 100% just came off the top of your head as you started talking.
Yeah. Also, because I still need to watch the recent episode of Solo Leveling, and I'm really hyped.
Same. I've been impressed with Solo Leveling. I think that before the anime came out, there was a lot of, I guess, concern that it was going to turn out well because people who had read the manhwa were worried that, like, the scenes are so, in the manhwa, are so well drawn, and it relies on that. And so people were concerned that the animation may not do it justice. But in my opinion, I thought it's been really good as somebody who hasn't read the manhwa. But what do you think, Shara?
I mean, I was definitely one of the people who literally told you, like, I'm worried.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I love Solo Leveling for many things. But a lot of it has to do with, like, the action and, like, my manga specifically is, like, really well known to be hard to follow with the action and stuff because of the scenes. But Solo Leveling does such a great job. I mean, it helps because it's also in color, obviously. But, like, it's also just, like, the way the artistry is and, like, how, I don't know, fulfilling it is to see, like, the main character do his thing, essentially. Like, it's just really cool seeing it all put together, like, in the manhwa. So it's, like, hard to imagine, like, an anime studio being able to do that at that similar level. So I've been so thoroughly impressed. And, like, it's cool to see Aziz watch it because he's, like, an anime only. So he hasn't, like, have any idea what's going on in the future as per I. Like, I've already finished the manhwa years ago. So it's really, like, nice to see how much he's enjoying it, too. I'm like, oh my gosh, yay.
I was just been surprised. I thought that it was going to be, like, a really, really simple battle shonen type of show. But it's a lot more gory, a lot less friendship, and it's got a really cool premise. And, you know, obviously we're not trying to spoil anything here. It's definitely going to be it's definitely going to be one of the anime that we're going to praise when we do our winter recap in probably next episode or in a couple episodes. Yeah. So, a little teaser right there. We're not spoiling Solo Leveling, but we're going to spoil a future episode that we're going to do on here.
Yeah, we can spoil ourselves. That's funny. Speaking of spoilers, though, oh my goodness. Are you excited about this episode of these?
Shoot. Yeah. That's a good transition, actually. It took me a second to be like, wait. Wait, are you talking about, like, the upcoming Solo Leveling episode? No, she's talking about our episode.
It's okay. I saw the gears turning. We're on video with each other.
Yeah, I was like, wait, wait a second.
I forgot what the episode was about, Shar.
Look, we have planned so many episodes for you guys, the listeners, in the future. Sometimes I forget, like, wait, what episode are we doing today? Which one are we going to end up recording?
Well, I'm glad I'm reminding you too. You're part of the audience now. But yeah, speaking of spoilers, guys, this episode's gonna be full of spoilers. I'm so sorry, but I'm not sorry because it's all about the best, or a few of the best, because we don't have all the time in the world. A few of the best standalone episodes in anime that we have personally watched. And by standalone, I'm not talking about the very first episode, you know, where it's like, oh, it hooked me in, or the very last episode where, like, a crazy death or, like, super sad stuff happens or whatever. I'm talking about, like, episode 10 of season 4 of a random anime, and, like, on its own, it's, like, full of emotion or full of, like, hypeness or just, like, I don't know, like, if you to watch it by itself, you're like, shoot, that was cinematic history right there. That was beautiful. I would watch that over and over again. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm really excited. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah. So, like Shara said, we're not going to go with an opening, like, first episode. We're not going to go with the finale of a season or something like that because that would be way too easy. And this exercise was a lot more fun because it made us think, like, okay, where was an episode that was, like, cinematic genius, super intense for the plot, or maybe not, but something that if you watched it by itself, with, like, just a little context of what the show was about, what the characters were like, which ones were our favorites, and what we deem as some of the best. But again, this is obviously going to have a personal opinion. These are not the if I had to list every single amazing episode that I can think of, maybe these ones aren't at the very top, because I also had to think about what has Shara watched, because I can spoil you guys because you can just look at the episode description, look at the timestamps, hint hint, and see, oh, they're gonna talk about this this show. I want to watch this show and I haven't watched it yet, and I don't want to be spoiled, so I'm going to skip over that. Shara can't, she doesn't have that luxury. So
yeah, just in general, I have to hear him talk all the time. I have to suffer. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. Why are we doing a podcast again?
Maybe we should stop.
So that's the final episode, guys.
This was Level Up Anime. Bye.
Roll outro music.
Just kidding. Shara, is there anything else we should describe?
I mean, shoot, guys. I'm so excited to, like, deep dive and psychoanalyze these episodes. Because for people who are actually going to listen because they watch these episodes, oh, man, I hope, like, we're hitting everything. Because, like, these are so deep, some of the stuff that happens. And, like, I love how anime, and it kind of, like, throws back to, like, a previous episode where it was, like, passing the barriers of subtitles and their favorite animes and having a starter kit for people getting into anime. Like, these alone could get people into anime because they're so, like, genius in the way of the script writing, the world building within 23 minutes. Like, imagine 24 episodes, 23 minutes they could do that. Amazing. So I'm excited. Hype.
All right. Without further ado, let's get started.
All right. I guess I'll start things off with our very first episode. And to remind everybody, we're just going to do a couple. I feel like we have, like, a whole list going on for us. So we had to, like, literally narrow it down to, like, two per person. Because I feel like we talked for, like, maybe 3 seasons of this, of anything.
Translation of what Shara is saying. Basically, I asked her before we started recording, how many episodes can we do?
Yeah.
And Shara was like, we can do 2 max.
Because I know us.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit. Now you're going to make me, like, have to organize in my head what episodes I want to do. So
if I don't pick your guys, save ourselves time.
Yeah. If I don't pick your guys' favorite anime, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can grill him in the comments later, okay?
At Level Up Anime Pod on Instagram and TikTok.
So shameless. I approve.
I forgot to do the plug in the intro, so I have to do it now.
You know, I always await your shameless plug, so I knew it was going to happen eventually.
Heck yeah.
Anyways, without further ado, I'll start off our little standalone episode with Vinland Saga. And I'm talking about season 2 and specifically episode 9. Oof. If you know what I'm talking about, Aziz.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, this episode, well, Vinland Saga in general is what inspired this episode. And we were just flabbergasted, jaws on the floor, just so impressed with everything that happened here. And Shara, go ahead. This is your choice. Tell the listeners what they need to know.
I mean, that alone speaks for itself, because I literally was, like, coming back from my rotations so dead from life, because, like, I was doing clinical rotations at the time. And, yo, I have fire burning in me after that episode. I was invigorated by the character growth and the big turnaround with our main guy, Forfin. So, if it hasn't already been emphasized enough, guys, spoiler. So, if you have not reached this point in the episode or in the series, please do not listen to what I'm about to say. Just skip. This is crazy what's going to happen.
Again, the timestamps are going to be in the episode description. If you're using Spotify, there's, like, a neat little chapters feature
on
there, and you can skip to the next chapter. I cannot say for sure on the other podcast platforms that we're on. So please look at the episode description for the timestamps and go to that timestamp if you're trying to skip this.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much, sir, who's editing all this.
Yes.
Anyways, so for the people that obviously have watched this, I don't really need to go into great detail about the summary of the series itself. All I really need to know is that we're thrown to the world of the Vikings with the Danes and the English, like, fighting with each other, and our main guy, Forfin, he was going through it in season 1, if you remember. He was, like, growing up, like, fighting, killing, you know, on the verge of, like, insanity, if he was already not insane to begin with. And, like, seeking revenge against, spoiler, his father's death. And kind of grows up with this kind of, like, vanguard group of, like, other really bad people that kill and stuff. One of the guys being Askeladd. And, you know, he kind of grows up to be, like, his father figure, too, if I don't know, I feel like he agrees with me. Like, he's not like a father figure in, like, a toxic sense.
Well, that's the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Is that Thor's and Askeladd are Thorfinn's two, like, men that he looks up to. Polar opposites of the type of people they are. even though like they're both pretty, they've both got like, they're driven and they both are good. In a sense, they're both good people, right? But Thor's is definitely more like the lawful good.
Yeah.
And Askeladd is more like the chaotic good.
I love the Dungeons and Dragons drop. I love that.
Yep. So Thorfinn, as he's growing up, it has a very, very mixed feelings towards Askeladd, because on one hand, he looks up to him, but on the other hand, he hates him for killing his father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like at the very end of season one, I remember like when Askeladd did die, not because of Thorfinn, because of some other dude and stuff that we won't bring up right now. But it was definitely mixed as a word to use for sure, because he was like, damn it, I couldn't get revenge. But at the same time, like, shit, I'm really sad that he died. There's definitely a whole mix.
Right, and that's what sets up season two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is now we're finding Thorfinn, and he's a slave in a farm. We don't know where he is exactly. We don't know how he got there. All we know is that Thorfinn is chilling as a slave, and he's still kind of brooding and still kind of thinking things over and trying to understand his feelings. Like, my whole purpose in life was to kill Askeladd, kill the man who killed my father. And now Askeladd is dead, and I didn't get to kill him. So now, what is the point of living? And that's kind of why he's a slave, because he just doesn't care anymore. He lost his vision. He lost his purpose in life. And the whole season of season two is him kind of trying to figure out, like, okay, what is the point of living now? Like, what is my new goal? Should I die? Can I ever forgive myself for all of the sins that I've committed as a youth? Can I forgive myself for killing so many innocent people? Or should I continue to try to find a way to keep living?
Exactly. Like, he's like the shell of his former self. And it's very interesting, because I remember when I was watching it and digesting season one and like updating Aziz, like my very live action, but like, oh my gosh, episode 8 of season one. Oh my goodness. I would also tell him, like, he is definitely becoming a slave to revenge, even though he feels like he's empowered by revenge. And then he literally becomes a slave to his revenge.
Badumptus!
Badumptus! Oh, I'm here with all the jokes, guys. I'll be here Wednesday again next week, literally.
But it is ironic how that worked out, right? And
yeah,
that's what makes Vinland so amazing in general, is that a main theme of Vinland is freedom, right?
Yeah.
The whole concept of Vinland, this land that we're not even sure exists, is supposed to be a land of freedom, a land without war, a land with bountiful resources where people can live in harmony. And all we have to do is just find it. And here we have Thorfinn, who thought that he was finally, in a sense, he thought that he was free and that he was doing everything of his own will. But in reality, he was a slave to that purpose, a slave to revenge. And even though he wasn't shackled by anything, like a literal slave, he was very much mentally enslaved by that concept. And it's fallen now to the point that not only is he mentally trapped, but physically as well.
For a shonen, it does such a great take on that psychological element of a character, and seeing him divulge into the state in season two especially, it's very fascinating. I think that's the best word to use, especially if somebody with a psychology minor and stuff. It's just very fascinating to see all that unfold, especially in the farming simulator in season two. But let me just get straight into like the nitty gritty of this episode specifically. So this is episode 9, guys. Right in the middle and thick of it, honestly. Because this episode, oh my gosh, Aziz, it was literally switched up his character so much. There's so much character development and growth in 23 minutes. And you'd think like, oh, they kind of like snapped him into, not his senses, but into a different type of person. Like, no, there was so much going on. He was literally on the brink of death. He was literally hanging from like a cliff between like the furrows of hell, where like there's this endless war between all these peace Vikings and warriors, and like what could have been Vinland. That, you know, that beautiful place with grass and trees and animals and heavenly, it's a heavenly paradise pretty much. In the beginning of the episode, you actually see him there, you know, you see him see his father, you know, who has passed on. And he's like, oh my gosh, father, you're still here. Oh my gosh, I missed you so much. And his father's like, I see what you did. I see what you did in season one. You killed a lot of people, sir. That's not who we are. And he gets like thrown in, carried back with like all these like zombie hands of all the people he died. To like this kind of like war infested place where all these like past warriors like himself are like kind of like fighting with each other in this like endless cycle of death and resurfacing and death again. And what's crazy to see is that he saw his father figure, he saw his like real father, biological father in Vinland, quote unquote, And he sees his figurative father figure, Askeladd, in like this war-infested place, also giving him some words of advice. And like seeing him kind of like move in between the two and like fighting with himself about his like past grievances and guilt was so fascinating.
Yeah. So before all of this, Thorfinn had been struggling with nightmares every night. And the nightmares stem from his guilt of all the things that he did in the past. Now that he lost his purpose, before he was able to rationalize everything and be, you know, able to tell himself, hey, I'm killing all these people and I'm doing all this stuff because it will get me to my end goal. And by doing that, I can be forgiven, or at least I can mentally forgive myself for all of the shit that I did prior to this. But now he didn't fulfill that. And now it's all worthless. And now he just has to bear the weight of his sins. And he's just sitting there, you know, every single night. And sure, he may distract himself during the day with the slave labor. He distracts himself with all that farming and chopping up trees and all that stuff. And his interactions with Einar, the other slave that he chills with. And he can distract himself with all of that stuff. But Einar is an innocent guy. He is not somebody that has ever killed somebody. He's never been somebody that was in war, just a victim of the Vikings actually going and infiltrating and raising his village and pillaging and raping and all of that. And so Thorfinn was on the other side of that. He was like, I was one of the people who was pillaging. I was one of the people who were raising villages. I was one of the people that was killing other people, other innocent people. And for what? Like, people like Einar did not deserve this. And as Einar kind of divulges more and more of his past to Thorfinn, Thorfinn just feels more and more guilty, to the point that episode 9 comes and he finally has this break. Is that a good way to word it? Like, just mentally broke for a second?
Yeah, he mentally broke, had like a meltdown of some sorts, metaphysically, if that makes sense, considering what he dreamt of, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I like how you put that, because this episode takes all that guilt, all that frustration that's been built up and boiling or whatever, and it comes to this pinnacle of him realizing, like, hey, I need to accept this. It's a lot about self-acceptance, too. Because that symbolism of that guilt really shows that first, like, 10 minutes. When he faces his father, like, Forrest and stuff, you see, like, all these zombie hands of the people. They both killed people in the past, right? Like, he himself is also a warrior, his father.
Right, right.
But you see himself, like, Forrest, standing as these zombie hands are trying to drag him down. But he's still standing. He's still very firm because he accepts that, like, he killed these people, and he's moved forward with that, but accepting that he was the cause of their death. But you see Thorfinn being literally dragged to the ground at his father's feet with these same hands, same number of hands, same amount of strength, but he's being fully dragged down to the ground, like, on his hands and knees in front of his father, because he's still, like, physically, mentally, like, pushed down by all of this guilt. And Einar just reminding him about this. And what's really cool is that, like, when you later meet Askeladd in this war-infested place, there's a certain, like, Viking saying, I don't know what it is at the top of my head, but like there's a certain world that he's in that, like, he's forced into because he also is a warrior. He's like, you know what, I was one of these people, Askeladd. I had that dog in me back in the day, and I'm still that bad person, you know. I deserve to be here. And what's really cool to Askeladd, he's kind of like chilling, like, on the side of the cliff. He's not even part of, like, the battle happening down there. He's just kind of chilling on the side, like, viewing over all these, like, imbeciles fighting with each other. And what's funny is that, like, he says, like, yeah, you were a warrior. You have to accept you're a warrior. Those people that are trying to, like, you know, drag you down with them to this hellscape, you have to accept that you killed these people. But in and of itself, that's a way for you to become a true warrior, a better warrior, because you can take these deaths and fight the real battle. That's literally what he quotes to him. And atoning for your sins, in a sense. And that kind of goes with, like, life in general, honestly. It's like, accept that you did this, but move forward with it. And be reborn from the violence that you caused. And that was really beautiful to see, because that really kind of, like, lit a switch, I guess, or a little light bulb in his head, like, hey, you're right. I did do this, but I can be a better person and accept that I was violent in the past, but I can use that as fuel to show that you don't have to solve all your problems with violence.
Isn't it interesting, too, that those words came from Askeladd and not Thor's? Because, again, Thorfinn looks up to his dad, Thor's, the most. Like, that is why, when he's in, like, the Vinland area, it's Thor's he sees. And that's, like, the ideal that he is trying to reach. The ideal he is trying to reach is his father, Thor's. Askeladd is the total opposite. He's trying not to become Askeladd. And even then, when he falls into that land, that purgatory, if you will, that battle place, I guess Thorfinn is in purgatory. He's trying to get up to, you know, their version of heaven. And instead, his guilt and those zombie hands drag him into hell. And who does he find there, as we saw? Askeladd, who's even there running the place, right?
Yeah.
And Askeladd's like, you know, after they talk, Askeladd basically tells him, like, dude, you do not belong here. You are only here because you're allowing them to drag you here. You did not, you're a good kid, but you need to accept everything that you did and you need to continue to move forward. And I just thought that was crazy that it came from Askeladd, and it further just explains the complicated relationship that Thorfinn has with Askeladd. But in a sense, now he's kind of finally accepting that, like, hey, Askeladd made me do some terrible shit. He did some terrible shit, but was he really that bad at the end of the day?
And it's so interesting seeing, like, the dichotomy, or I guess juxtaposition between his both father figures, in a sense. Because they say a certain line that gives me chills, hearing it back and seeing how contrasting they are, but at the same time, very similar. Because he takes both of these words of wisdom that I'm about to say and combines them into this new reborn version of himself. Because we know, like, one of the famous sayings in Vinland for people that have been caught up in stuff is that Forrest tells him that you don't have any enemies. Nobody has any enemies. And he repeats this to himself further past this episode at this point, right? But Askeladd also says in this same episode, everyone besides yourself is your enemy. And it's also true in a sense, because he's looking at these people in this weird hellscape purgatory, as he's mentioned, that, like, yeah, these people are your enemy because you don't want to be these people.
Yep.
But you also have to accept that you were that dog. You had that dog in you, but you have to accept that you're past that point and you're a true warrior that can move past this and accept that you don't have enemies anymore, like your actual biological father. So that in itself just, this episode was so flipping good. You can really see him grow so much from this episode alone. And that's why I, hands down, one of my favorite standalone episodes.
It's crazy, like, it was such a great, like, creative take on just that mental struggle that Thorfinn was having. And just the way that they, like, all the metaphors that they used, both, like, verbally as well as artistically, right? And everything to show, like, the struggle he was having. And now finally, after all of this, Thorfinn comes out with a vision. He comes out with a purpose again. He comes out forgiving himself, in a sense, for what he did in the past. And finally is able to start moving forward. It's a little bit of a naive solution that he came. So at the same time, too, it's realistic in the sense that, like, a person can go through all of this and have an epiphany, but it's only stage one of what they really need to do. Because when you find out Thorfinn is saying, like, oh, I want to be a pacifist. I don't want to fight anymore. We all know that in the land of Vikings and this time, you know, in this age, to get away without violence is going to be impossible. But Thorfinn feels so guilty. Now he's gone the other way. He's like, no, I want to be a pacifist. I never want to fight anymore. And it's still giving that room and that growth for Thorfinn to end up realizing that, hey, the solution isn't never fight again. It's fight with a purpose. Fight to protect, not to kill.
Exactly. The symbolism really shows, not just him literally hanging from a cliff between life and death, as he is literally on the brink of life and death, but also these two extremes, right? The extreme of hell versus heaven, the extreme of being a pure pacifist and this monk of sorts, you know, or being this, like, crazy killer that's, like, on some bloodthirsty, ravenous, you know, goal of revenge. But in the sense of what Aziz was saying is, like, you can have both, but in a realistic sense. And this is him kind of growing into that and accepting what he has done. So, man, this episode alone, I was like, after I finished this, I was like, 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10 season already. And I'm only, like, on episode 9 so far. But enough of me. I need to hear what your standalone episode is, Aziz.
All right. I'm going to go in a totally different direction. Similar in the sense that it's about character growth, but a very different genre of anime. And that's going to be Violet Evergarden, episode 10. Loved ones will always watch over you.
Oh, man, I picked that too?
I figured. I know you, Shara, so I was like...
Oh, my God, I picked that too!
The chance that there's going to be overlap.
God damn it.
Okay, do you want to do it? And then yeah, I can pick a different one?
No, I didn't talk so much. But, like, seriously, oh, wait, you guys can tell we did not perform.
Yeah.
I was like, which one would he not pick?
I'm actually surprised because I thought you might pick my second one. That's why I went with this one first.
Okay, don't say your second one because this will be my honorable mention.
I know, right?
We literally are married couple.
Yep. So do you...
Just talk. God damn it, Z. This episode's gonna be like 20 minutes now.
Oh my god. Okay. Alright. So the song... Sorry guys, I'm still dying. I knew this was gonna happen, but I thought it would be my other episode, not this
one. That's so funny. But
I knew Shara would love this.
Because I do. As you can tell, it's like, I literally died. I have my notes in front of me on my psycho analysis.
Okay. I'll let you do the color commentary for this then. But it's funny because I think I watched Violet Evergarden before you did, and I told you, like, this is my favorite episode in the entire series when you get to that point. I was like, there's an episode. I didn't tell her specifically this is the episode I'm talking about. I was like, but there's an episode that made me tear up. And I was like, try to figure out which one it was, and she guessed it right away.
Yeah, because, like, I literally was in tears. I was bawling my eyes. I was like, if this is not the episode, you are heartless disease.
Yeah, I don't think, like, the rest of the show, I think you can get away with not being emotional. But this one, like, you really don't have a heart if this one doesn't at least make you feel a little tingle.
A little tingle in the heartstrings, for sure. Oh, my goodness. Well, goes to show we both really like it.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to try to make it somewhat quick, then. So, to summarize the show up to this point, the main character, Violet, she is a survivor of this huge war. And she was used, if I remember correctly, she was used as a weapon in that war, and as
like a child soldier almost. Yeah.
She was essentially like used as a weapon and was trained to be like an emotionless assassin. And so because of that, she does not feel emotion. She doesn't understand what love is. She doesn't understand what happiness or sadness or anything is. She just kind of feels nothing. And so the whole purpose of Violet Evergarden is her, after the war, having to become and, like, integrate with normal, like, a peaceful, normal society and become a normal human being. And as such, she joins the post office as an auto memory doll. And what the auto memory dolls are people who write letters. Because this is, the setting for this is, like, hundreds of years ago before technology was a thing.
Yeah.
So it was very in vogue that the only way that people could really communicate with each other was to write letters. And so Violet starts writing letters. And what's cool is, as the season goes on, this is a slice of life episodic show, but the overarching plot here is Violet continues to grow and grow as a person. And this kind of hits its climax in episode 10. So Violet gets a job where she has to go to this rich family where the mom owns this huge mansion, but she has a terminal illness. Mm-hmm. And she hires Violet to write a bunch of letters for her before she passes away. And she has a younger daughter named Anne, who is at this point only like a few years old. So she understands that her mother is dying, but she doesn't understand, obviously, like what the purpose of all this is. And she's both like enamored with Violet because Violet, if you watch the show, is a very beautiful woman, but she looks like a doll. Which is very fitting that she's an auto memory doll. And she also has prosthetic limbs and all that stuff. So that kind of goes more and more with the whole doll image. So a young kid looks at it and is like, oh, are you even like a real human? Like, you don't even have like normal arms.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that like there's always guests coming in and out of the house because obviously the mom is sickly and, you know, she's trying to wrap up loose ends, if you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Unfortunately. But it's interesting when Violet walks in, she's also a little bit like taken aback, like, oh, another guest taking away my time with my mom. I already know she's sick. I don't want people to take more time away from her. But she's like infatuated with her, fascinated by her. She's like, wait, she's actually kind of cool.
Yep. So she starts to like Violet later on as Violet, because Violet's very nice to her and she like gives her attention and all that stuff. So Violet's there for about a week and then she leaves. And at this point in the episode, we don't really know what the letters were for, but I mean, we can kind of guess, but like, we don't know for sure. But we kind of fast forward now towards the end of the episode, and this is what makes it so crazy, is because up to this point, Violet kind of just does her job and goes. And yes, she's growing as a character, but this is like the point where Violet starts really feeling emotion, because now she's talking to her coworkers, and she's just, she lets out this, like, shout out to the voice acting, amazing crying. And she's like, I had to hold this in the entire time I was there. Like, just the thought that this young girl is going to have to live the rest of her life without her mother, it just was too much for me to bear. And that's what that's all I could keep thinking about the entire time. And she's like, and it's just like, it's amazing. Like, not only did Violet feel these emotions when she had never felt these emotions, but at the same time had the maturity to hold it in, stay strong, give Anne attention, keep her happy, but also fulfill her job and the mother's wishes, and then come and just like let it all out for the first time. And it's just a very, very powerful scene. And then at the very end, we get this montage of the letters that Violet wrote. And every year for the next 50 years, her mother wrote a letter to be sent on Anne's birthday.
He's always watching over her, as the title says.
Everyone's always watching over you.
Oh my gosh.
It's very beautiful.
Honestly, so many goosebumps during this episode. Like, I have to also mention, like, there's another part that literally made me cry too, alongside, like, Violet also breaking down, despite being how professional she was the entire episode. Like, everybody's human too, even if you have android arms.
yep, even if you were an assassin.
Exactly. But even before I say what I'm about to say, I love the series in general and stuff because of the fact that, like, it's an anthology. And, like, she's also having a lot of self-discovery per episode. But yeah, speaking about this episode specifically, like, episode 10 of Violet, I also teared up especially when, like, the little girl Anne, as young as she is, like, I don't know how old she was, like, maybe 7, 8, not more than 10 at least.
But yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but for someone of her age and stuff, the gravity of her words when she finally confronts both Violet and, like, her mom and stuff about, like, the letters and her spending time with her and stuff. Like, you just see the mixture of emotions even beforehand. Like, when she's, like, peeking through the window and, like, seeing her mom, like, really, like, investing in these letters, like, physically getting sick and stuff, or, like, just emotionally getting very, like, overwhelmed. She's like, what's happening? Why are these letters so important? Why are they more important than me? Why are you, like, pushing yourself? And, like, who are these letters even for? And I love her mom's response, because it also, like, takes note of, like, you know, that last bit where she sees the letters, like, coming through the mail every couple years. Her mom's saying, like, it's for someone. Just someone really far away right now.
Yep. I'll use, like, that line.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, chills. But to a child, you know, you don't really think that far ahead. You're just thinking, like, my mom's sick and I want to spend time with her. And, like, the fact when she confronts her, he's like, yo, you're sick, but these letters, the person that you're writing letters for, they're not here with you right now. They're for someone far away. But, like, I'm here with you. I'm your daughter. You should be spending time with me. And, like, obviously, she's not thinking that far ahead. But, like, it's just really sad to see from a daughter's perspective, a young daughter's perspective, of, like, the pain and anguish that she's going through. Like, honestly, goosebumps. Like, what's more important? Her letters. And, like, her mom is, like, obviously can't tell her right away, you know? Like, like, these are for you in the future and stuff. Because these will be, like, a little surprise and stuff, right? But, like, the fact that, like, the daughter herself is just saying, like, yo, I'm here right now. Spend time with me. I know you're going to be gone soon. And the fact that she says it so upfront to everybody, including the maid on the side, who's just like, I just came here for tea. I just came here for the biscuits and tea, and I'm bringing the tea. But, like, the fact that she says that to her mother, all, like, red-faced and crying and saying, like, you're going to be gone soon. You're going to leave me all alone. I'm going to be all alone really, really soon. And this is what you're spending your time on. And as a mother, when you hear that from your daughter, it just, I don't know. It's just, it really, it hurts in a different way, obviously, right? So seeing that, and then the switch up at the end, when she gets the letters, like, during those pinnacle years of life, you know, like, when she's, like, 18, when she meets her first love, when she has her own child, like, oh my gosh, goosebumps again. You guys can't see me right now, but, like, I got a little bumps all over me saying this, but, like, seeing her, like, still watch over her as a mother for these, like, really crucial parts of life and these milestones, it's really beautiful to see, because despite, like, all the hurdles and the frustration they had during, like, this really hard part of life, she's still always there for her. That's just, like, mother's love in general. And, like, Aziz knows this about me, but, like, I am a sucker for, like, family stuff. Like, whenever, like, there's family hardship or, like, death in the family or, like, just anything, and, like, you see, like, resolution from that or compromisations or, like, whatever, just, I'm just bawling my eyes out, honestly.
I mean, it got me too, man. It got me too. I just love how well they depicted how a child would feel in that moment And it was just like, because you can understand where Anne is coming from. She knows, like, hey, I only have so many days left with you. Like, spend it on me, because these are the moments that I am going to remember for the rest of my life. And her mom is looking with the purview of like, hey, don't worry, we're on the same page. I'm going to sacrifice a week now to be with you for the next 50 years of your life.
Absolutely. Like, the general storyline of this episode alone, I think it's an anthology, it just has a beginning, middle, and end. The simplicity of the climax and the problem and whatever, it's like very simple in nature, but also very realistic. Because you're just following like this mother in her last couple of days as her child is very frustrated not being able to spend those last couple of days with her, or months, or weeks, you know? And you see Violet trying to like help along the way and trying to be professional also. And for somebody who's robotic both figuratively and literally and stuff, you see like that anguish and frustration also permeating between herself and trying to help her along the way and stuff too. And just seeing like the mother's journey and the child and mother relationship is so beautiful. But definitely very bittersweet at the end for sure.
Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts that you want to share?
I mean, can I just like sit on this couch and start crying? Does that count?
We'll have to wait till we finish recording.
Okay. That might take a little too long, right? Maybe over time if we do that.
It's getting late over here, okay? We gotta finish this up soon.
Speak for yourself. We have a 3-hour time difference.
Yeah, so it's even later for you.
But yeah, no, just in general, like, I loved it. Like, you guys, you could literally just watch this episode on your own. You could, if you have not even watched Violet Evergarden, which I hopefully you have not been spoiled at this point, but if you haven't, like, you could just watch this episode on its own and still feel like, yo, this is just a really good episode. I don't think we should have added this to your starter kit too. I think you add to your honorable mentions.
Yeah, I had it as my honorable mentions, and that's a good reason why.
Love it. Right. You love to see it.
I'm gonna stay in this direction with my second take, but I'm gonna go with a more low-key anime.
I'm gonna pick this one.
I thought you might pick this one because you and I watched it together.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with a much lesser known, lesser popular anime, but still very, very good. Surprisingly good. Like sleeper good. I'm going to go with Overtake episode 9, The Day of the Disaster.
Oh, that episode, that is a good episode. Yeah. That's a good episode.
That's the reaction I knew you'd have. That's the reaction I knew you'd have.
That's a good damn episode. Shit. That's definitely low-key.
Yup. So again, like, when I was trying to think of episodes, I had to go with Shara's list and be like, okay, what shows has Shara watched so I won't spoil for her? And I was like, oh yeah, this is one that we literally watched together. And I was worried she might pick this one. But it's just, again, still so funny that she went with Violet Evergarden.
No, because it's funny because I picked Violet Evergarden because I didn't think you would pick it.
Oh, no. This was like my first idea.
Oh my god. Like, so I thought you were going to go with like a shonen or something.
I mean, I had an idea for some shonen ones and stuff. But again, Shara hasn't watched them. So
I want to watch them eventually. So I'm sorry, guys. My fault.
I'll mention one of them in the honorable mentions later.
But Overtake, though, that is technically a shonen and like very sleeper. In a sense. Right. I don't want anybody else who watched it besides us, honestly.
Other people need to get on it. And the reason why is because I think you're going to look at the synopsis and think, oh, this is a racing anime. But just like a lot of other sports anime, the sport is just the medium that is used to tell the story. And in Overtake's case, it's a show about a photographer. Which you kind of switch because you think it's just about racing. But no, it's about a photographer who finds himself enamored with Formula 4. And he decides like, oh, I want to start taking pictures for this team that he saw that they were just the lovable underdogs, right? They're a little prickly when you talk to the racer, but like their owner is super kind and talks to him and explains all of the stuff in Formula Racing. And you meet this young boy who's the racer for his team. And like these guys have like no funding at all. They're just really trying to make ends meet. And they're going to get up against like these giants. If you watch Formula One, think of like Ferrari or Mercedes or Red Bull as like the giant. And then it's like Williams. But like Williams of today, not Williams from like 30 years ago when they were good.
I was going to compare like Ferrari to Hot Wheels. If Hot Wheels had a team.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like that's a better comparison.
That's pretty much what it is. It's a Ferrari race, you know, it's a Ferrari racing like an RC car.
Yeah.
So like the story is about, you know, just that whole kind of journey of the photographer. But there's this whole subplot about the photographer and his journey with accepting himself, because it hints throughout the entire show that he's got a past, and it's the reason that caused him his divorce. It's the reason why he can't take pictures of other people anymore. And they'll even like show this scene every once in a while of just like this young girl just shook and just eyes wide open. And we find out as the show goes on that scene, like that picture, is something that he took that ended up getting him just kind of blacklisted from a bunch of other newspapers and magazines and stuff. And then as the show goes on, we find out that picture is of a girl who, like, seconds before, she ended up dying in this whole crazy earthquake that happened in this remote village.
Yeah, it's like a tsunami. She's, like, literally seeing the waves approach her. It's like, I'm about to die.
Yeah, so the earthquake causes a tsunami. She's looking at the waves. It's just a very chilling, honestly, really well done. Because the art of the show, like, no offense, is not, like, amazing. But that little like still image that they keep using, really well drawn.
It's like disturbingly good. Yeah. And like the fact that like he spent time with the family and stuff, and especially the little girl like in that community beforehand and got to bond with them, is like even deeper entrenched into like why it hurt him so much to see that photo. And
And we find that out in this episode. So basically what had happened right before is that our photographer, his name is Koya just kind of disappears, all right? And so the racer, Haruka, the young boy, who's, you know, growing up and kind of looks at Koya as an older brother figure, Koya's always been there for him. Now he wants to be there for Koya. And so Koya disappears, but Haruka does a little snooping, a little investigating, starts figuring out a little bit more and more about his past, including meeting up with Koya's ex-wife, who's also his boss.
That's awkward.
And, right? They have a very interesting relationship because you can tell they still love and care about each other, but like they broke up for reasons. And we don't really know those reasons until towards later on in the show. But it ends up that Haruka kind of can put two and two together and figure out where Koya may have went. And turns out Koya went to that remote village where this earthquake happened, where he was, you know, years and years ago. And so it turns out that he runs into him there, and Koya's like, Haruka, what are you doing here? And Haruka's like, listen, I'm not leaving until you decide that you want to come back home. And Koya's like, well, there's still some stuff that I need to do while I'm here. So Haruka's like super stubborn and is just like, I'm not leaving until you come back home with me. So I'm going to stay with you. So Koya says, okay. Come live, you know, come chill with me for a bit. And they go out and they go explore like different areas. They go to a restaurant and Haruka tries like exquisite oysters, you know, really nice, well quality oysters for the first time. And they go out on a boat. They visit a shrine. They just explore all of these parts of the city. And, you know, Koya's doing this because he's like, well, this is what I did when I was here doing a story like years and years ago. And he's kind of like reliving all of that stuff. And then, you know, as the episode kind of reaches its second part, now we figure out that Koya is there because the grandfather of that young girl who had the picture taken that passed away, he is on death's door right now. And his kids, so the grandfather's kids, the parents of that girl, are complaining and like, you know, like, how dare this man take this picture and, you know, display it for the world to see? How dare he print this? Like, the trauma that this is giving us, and, you know, all this stuff, which, fair enough, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can understand why they would feel this type of way, why they'd want him to, quote unquote, be canceled. And then now finally, Koya goes and tells the story to everybody about what happened. And, you know, to kind of summarize it, basically, Koya went to this village years ago to tell a story, and he's getting to know all the villagers, taking pictures, all this stuff,
gets to know this grandfather and his granddaughter, and he's taking pictures of them and all that stuff. And what's cool is, like, the grandfather never really saw the point of pictures, but Poya kind of tells him, like, hey, there is a purpose of preserving these memories, right? Because this is something we can always look back on and smile, right? And
so, funny enough, that's right? what happened.
And so, you know, the grandfather goes and is like, hey, can you take a selfie of us? So it's him, Koya, granddaughter, all in a cute selfie. And so now Koya's kind of explaining everything. You're kind of saying, like, oh, okay, so Koya really bonded with these guys. Now we're, you know, fast forwarding to the earthquake. You got the sirens going on. Everybody's freaking out for good reason, because this is like a high magnitude earthquake. I think it's like 7 something.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, this isn't Tokyo. This is a smaller village. It is not equipped to handle all of this. So
yeah, the infrastructure is just like little villages and
yeah.
stuff.
And yeah. And so everything near the shoreline, because this is like a remote village by the sea, everything is collapsing. Now we got a tsunami warning. The waves are coming closer into the village. Everybody's trying to evacuate. And so Koya's helping out with the evacuation. And he, you know, he's like, oh, wait, he's using his camera to see closer to the shoreline if everybody's coming. He notices that the daughter isn't there, you know, the granddaughter. And so he's using his camera to try and look around by the shoreline to see where she might be, right? To see if she can help her out. And he does. When he ends up finding her, he notices it's too late. That tsunami yeah. wave is coming and crashing. He zooms in on her, you know, when he sees where she is, and all that you see as the viewer is her face and just her eyes opening up with shock.
Just pure fear.
Right. And Koi is freaking out because he's like, oh my God, like, what can I, there's nothing we can do. And just kind of reflexively, just completely unintentionally snaps a picture.
Yeah.
Obviously, the granddaughter passes away and, you know, she doesn't survive. A lot of people died. And Koya stays behind to help with the rebuilding efforts and help just everybody who managed to evacuate. And he ends up apologizing to the grandfather, shows him the picture of everything. And the grandfather is actually the one who ends up requesting Koya to go ahead and publish this picture so that everybody, till the end of time, does not forget what happened to that village.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm really about to cry right now. Like, reliving this episode.
Same. Oh, I love that, like, I'm the one who ended up choosing all the emotional episodes.
No, I mean, they're all pretty emotional, I'm not going to lie. But, like, this one, like, obviously, like, a death occurred, technically.
Yeah, but villain isn't going to make you cry. The two I picked are like, oh, these are tear jerkers.
Well, standalone, the description of standalone means a lot for different people. And, like, one's tearjerker for me, one's, like, invigorating character growth. But, like, man, this episode was so good. I think, like, I blocked it out for a reason. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so the episode ends with Koya recollecting the story. Haruka, because the granddaughter's parents are still talking shit, and Haruka starts defending Koya. Like obviously, he did not do anything wrong. This is, and then the grandfather kind of wakes up from his sleep, sees Koya, and is like, hey, really sorry about all this stuff. The grandfather then, after apologizing, tells him, like, hey, come over here, and then hands him his phone, and it's a picture of Koya with him and the granddaughter, that selfie that they took. And
her memories.
Yeah. And now, you know, we end up seeing, it flashes forward to the funeral, because now the grandfather passed away, and Haruka and Koya are talking to each other, and Koya's like, all right, I did what I had to do. I'm ready to go home. And we continue on with the story.
I remember, like, me and Z were sitting on the couch, and, like, when the credits started rolling, I don't see, like, you know, credits for anime usually, but on the slower end, you know, really, like, pieced together, like, what did I just watch? I was just agape. My mouth was agape about, like, how emotionally driving that episode was, like, seriously. And it's funny because when me and Aziz, like, first got into the anime, like, Overtake, like, we're both, like, F1 fans. Like, Aziz got me into F1, like, racing in general. And this is obviously, like, F4, so it's, like, a different tier of racing. But we were like, let's watch because we like sports. We like F1 and stuff. This is cool sports anime. Friendship, whatever. It was very much the opposite. I was like, I did not think I was going to cry.
Yeah, like I said, I really thought this was just going to end up being a sports anime. And I love sports anime.
But in reality, the secondary story, if anything.
Yeah, the racing was maybe the secondary or tertiary subject in this whole thing. And I think that's what made this episode so powerful, is that you don't really see it coming, and you don't think that this lower budget anime is going to, and you know, from a manga that is not very well known, is going to come out with such a great story, such a great backstory to the main character, and showing him also accepting his past and being able to finally move forward and realizing, like, okay, I've kind of battled my demons now. I think I'm ready. I think I can finally take a picture of a person again.
No, seriously. Like, when we first saw, like, the main character, we thought, like, oh, he just wants to be one of the racers. No, he wants to capture the racers, both their emotional, like, highs and emotional lows. And that, like, was very interesting because, obviously, like, as he's saying, the main reason why he doesn't take pictures of, like, people anymore is because of the fact that, like, he's traumatized by taking that photo on reflex on that supposed day that we don't want to talk about because it's going to make me cry again. But it's interesting how he's kind of like battling with that. And the fact that he reflexively took a picture at the very beginning of our main dude and stuff, the other guy who's the racer and whatever, like when he was in his like low, just crying, like the fact he was able to do that reflexively, even though he's traumatized by the past and stuff, he's like, wait, I can do this again. I can take pictures of people again. And I don't know, it's really powerful seeing him like grow as a character, because the other characters too, they also have their side stories. Like they want to be the best racers and stuff and whatnot. But the fact that the main story isn't actually about racing is so fascinating to me. But it still works so well with the storyline. Like, ugh, amazing. I say I gave like that anime 9 out of 10 or something, or 8.5. It was so good.
Yeah, it ended up being a lot. We thought it was going to be maybe like a 6 or something like that.
You're watching it for fun, honestly.
Our expectations were low. But I do like, too, that it's an excellent take on human psychology as well, and just lets you know that a lot of times we think that we've moved forward, or we think that like, hey, everything is okay, but we're really not. But a lot of times what helps us start moving forward, even initially, is just like some other moment that is more powerful than that sad moment that is bringing us down.
Right? Exactly. It really pushes you forward.
Yeah. And like for Koya, it was Haruka. It was seeing Haruka so frustrated after losing in the first episode, and he's crying. And Koya sees that and is like, yo, that's a nice picture. And then, you know, clicks that. And that, for him, was more powerful for that moment than remembering that scene. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, happiness trumps sadness.
Exactly. No, it's really powerful, that scene. The fact that, like, he was so burdened by that, and seeing something else helped him push past that trauma, really shows that you really can move forward despite all the negativity that you may feel like you have in your life and the barriers and whatnot. So, I don't know. You guys, if you haven't watched it, I'm sorry we spoiled you, but also actually watch the season. It's so good.
Honestly, if you listen to this not watching it and caring about spoilers, that's on you, because we warned you at the very beginning there's going to be spoilers.
Yeah, guys. But also watch it. It's really good.
All right. We're going to do our honorable mentions real quick. These are not going to have spoilers. We're just going to do like a really quick, like, one sentence summary. So, Shara, what's your honorable mention, since I took your second episode anyway?
Yeah, Z. So, Derry, no, it's fine. I like how our brains meshed in that sense. But my honorable mention, because I swear everybody's watched this anime at this point, because it's so mainstream. But, and like, okay, by the way, I know I'm going to become like this character on this podcast that like loves Attack on Titan too much. That's me in real life. But it's Attack on Titan.
Oh, yeah.
For episode 10. Memories of the Future. And that's just pretty much featuring Aaron's dad and Aaron bonding, and just a lot of family trauma. I'm not gonna say anything more than that. Just a lot of family trauma we have to unwrap in that episode. And yeah, it was pretty good.
I have many honorable mentions that I could give. I'm just gonna go with
pick one.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the easiest one, because it's the one that I've watched most recently. One Piece episode 1015. If you know, you know. That's all. It was like the 20-year anniversary of One Piece, so they really upped the budget. And that episode is movie quality. Like, it's amazing. and it really kind of kicks off the climax of the Wano arc. So it's beautiful.
So the episode's called If You Know, You Know?
No.
Okay, that'd be very Gen Z of them.
I'd be surprised if Japan got on that level.
I would watch it.
I mean, it's One Piece. I'll watch just about anything One Piece.
Lovely. Amazing. Well, that wraps up pretty much all our standalone episodes, not all of them, but some of them that we could fit into one podcast episode, essentially. I swear, like, maybe next week we'll have another one similar to this, or at least a couple months from now, because I have a lot more.
I think I've said this earlier, but if you guys like this format and you guys like this topic, we can definitely do more, especially if Shara lets me spoil her a little bit, because there's so many anime that I can mention here that Shara hasn't watched yet, and... There's a lot of low-key anime that you guys have not watched, probably, and it's good. They're good.
Yeah, it's a fine balance, honestly, so if you know, you know. But anyways, with that being said, I guess we should just, like, name off what we just mentioned, without spoiling, obviously, because maybe the people that skipped over don't want to hear spoilers now. But with that being said, one of my standalone episodes I loved was Vinland Saga, Season 2, Episode 9, Oath. Oh, was yours of these?
So the one that I went with was Violet Evergarden, episode 10. Loved ones will always watch over you.
Yep.
And then because I took Shara's, I had another one. And that's Overtake, episode 9, The Day of the Disaster.
So write that down, guys. And make sure that if you haven't watched those episodes, watch them now.
Or watch watch that series and get to that point.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Just watch it. You're welcome. You're welcome in advance for heartbreak and trauma. That wraps it up. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. No, thanks for listening, guys. As always, if you haven't yet, please check out our social media. We have an Instagram page, at Level Up Anime Pod. We're also on TikTok. If you haven't yet, follow us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast that you use, where chances are we're on there. Give us a 5-star rating, share with your friends, all that stuff. We're trying to get more and more out there, and the more you guys listen and support us, the more content that we're able to create. So,
exactly. We got 100,000 likes on my next reel, guys. Aziz will do a TikTok dance.
No, I will not.
Please. You could do a little floss with the floss dance.
Okay. If I get it, we get 1,000,000, I'll do something.
I think that's doable. I could do that. We'll keep this. We'll keep this recording for the next 10 years. You're going to have to dance in 10 years from now if TikTok's a thing.
I'm scared because it'll happen.
You know, I'll remember.
Yes, I do. All right. That wraps it up. So, without further ado, my name's Aziz.
My name's Shara.
And this was Level Up Anime.
Bye-bye.